All right, what the heck is going on when the National Guard has to be activated because one of our major cities in Minnesota is under cyber attack? It is drive time. We are live at Target Field today. If you want to get a sense of summer without being out of the humidity, check out our stream on the YouTube channel on WCCO Radio. You can see Dan and I here at Target Field. So the big story of the day is the city of St. Paul under a cyber attack. I'm not exactly freaking out about the fact that I can't check out a library book in St. Paul, right? Or I can't pay a water bill. But the fact that cyber criminals are going after cities now and city government, that has me concerned. And I don't know if our cities in Minnesota fully have their arms around this problem. Minnesota, Wisconsin, anywhere in America, frankly. Are we ready? Because how does this unfold? What is next? What are they after? Kate Keene is the vice president at Worldwide Technology. She is a global cybersecurity expert and an advocate, and she is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline because we wanted to get kind of a big picture look at this. Kate, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Are cities ready for this next wave of cyber criminals to be coming after kind of local hometowns like what happened in St. Paul?
You know, that's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of preparedness that goes on. You know, every city does have cyber defense. Every organization, every government does have emergency contingency planning. But the reality is that, you know, cyber risk changes almost on a daily basis. And, you know, they get more creative on how they're going to attack, what they're going to attack, and how that's going to impact. And they have different reasons for attacking, you know, whether it's, you know, like you said, not being able to check out a library book or to cause fear and panic amongst citizens, or to do things like take hospitals down, telecommunications down. There's a lot of ways that, unfortunately, cyber criminals can really cripple our cities. And this has been going on, whether it be cities, school districts, hospitals, for a number of years now.
So we've seen it in the school districts for sure. And the city of Minneapolis had a very major breach of their school district not long ago. I think, you know, part of the challenge here is there are limited funds, right? This is not we're not talking about Fortune 500 companies that might have a budget to look at this stuff. This is the city of St. Paul that's worried about safety and security and all the, you know, and police in the real world. And then to have to worry on top of it about the fact that there are bad actors trying to break in. And what are they trying to get? We don't know. But this is a challenge because this work isn't cheap, is it?
No, it's not. And you bring up a good point. You know, like even the Fortune, you know, say 100 companies, you could spend every dollar profit on cyber, you know, technology and still not necessarily be safe. You have to kind of think about what are the critical things we need to be focusing on, you know, whether it be water, you know, electricity, our, you know, even like things like stoplights or police communication systems. What are the things we can't live without and kind of do an extra bubble wrap around those? And then it's about education. How do we educate the population so they know what to do when there is an attack?
When you look at these sorts of attacks, is there a common way that these criminals are getting into the systems? Is this somebody clicking on a phishing link, or is this more sophisticated people figuring out vulnerabilities in the system and kind of breaking through?
It's actually both. So, you know, we hear about the phishing links or the sophisticated attacks, even on our, like, Gmail and things like that to gather information. That's one way. And a lot of times those are information gathering so that they can do more sophisticated attacks. We've seen in the last couple of years, you'll have heard about something called the Typhoons, which is a group of Chinese actors. And they've been sitting in systems like our water systems, our utilities, telecommunications, for years gathering intel to ensure they understand how best to attack us. So it's a little bit of both. There isn't one way they attack all the time. It's more they're kind of opportunistic or they sit and wait depending on what they're trying to accomplish.
From what you know about the way here in Minnesota they've been dealing with this, St. Paul said that the attack started late Friday. The systems were shut down today to try to prevent the spread. They're working with the FBI. They're working with the state. They've communicated pretty clearly. And the National Guard here has a cyber protection unit, which I had no idea about until today. Yep. But I look at this and think, for me as an outsider, like, honestly, I'm sort of impressed, Kate. Like, it seems like they're handling this in about the best way they can. What's your take?
I was reading about it over the weekend, and I heard about it on Friday. And what I'd say is, I think you're doing everything right. To your point, you know, the systems that are impacted are shut down to stop further spread or reinfection. They're doing everything they can with forensics. They've engaged the right national and even to some degree international resources to help understand what they're dealing with, and they're looking at how they can restore. We always know that there's going to be cyber attacks, but it's the restoration recovery. How fast can we get it back up, and how can we lean on organizations like the FBI, and like you said, even the National Guard, to help make sure that the impact of the attack is as minimal as possible? So I'm really proud of the city. I think they've done a great job so far.
Kate Keene is with us, Vice President at Worldwide Technology. She's been described as a cybersecurity visionary. Kate, I know. How about that? Like, that's a little overwhelming. I don't know. That's
a
lot of pressure.
I still have a problem being an expert. I still think I'm a novice in pretty much everything.
Well, it's sort of hard to keep up with the bad guys in this area, right? And I think when it was the schools, and we had here a very large grocery chain and distributor, UNFI and Super Value here, where you had, like, you know, you're going to the grocery store and they don't have eggs and they don't have milk, not because of tariffs or cost or anything, but because somebody got in their computers and was executing a ransomware attack. Often this is for money. Sometimes this is trying to get people's personal information, although I don't know quite whether the city of St. Paul, the city is saying we don't have sort of the personal information people want. What are the motivations here? Is it usually, in your experience, the ransom, people trying to get money out of this deal?
It depends. So, you know, a lot of times it is money, ransomware. You know, we attribute a lot of the attacks on rent money to North Korea, and there's some Russian state actors as well, and just homegrown as well. It's a money thing.
Yeah.
Things like this where you see where it doesn't really have money motivation, it can be really just to create distrust and concern from a population perspective, so population control. You know, they're trying to seed, in essence, sow seeds of doubt or get pieces of information, or they're using, it sounds funny, an attack like the one we've seen as a precursor to, say, a larger attack on a bigger city. What were they able to do? How were they able to do it?
Huh.
What worked?
Interesting.
And we hear it is called door knock attacks. So there's a lot of different motivations, unfortunately, and it depends on the actor, it depends on what they're trying to accomplish, and unfortunately, this may not be the last one like this we see.
Yeah, and you say, like, maybe they do this to see what they can, I hadn't considered that, where it's like, let's see how this goes, and now we can, you know, let this launch on Chicago or L.A. or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, it's basically a learning thing, a learning exercise, and we see that a lot, you know, with more sophisticated threat actors.
Kate Keene is with us, cybersecurity expert at Worldwide Technology. When you think about the number one vulnerability, you know, I'm just thinking about the people listening, what we should be worried about, what we should be asking elected officials about. What is the number one vulnerability that worries you?
The one that keeps me up at night, and I was actually in Washington, New York last week on it, is our energy system and our water system. So the utilities and water.
Yeah.
You know, as we think about some of these attacks, like on cities and schools and hospitals, you know, they have widespread ramifications. But think about what happened if the water treatment facilities went down, if the grid went dark.
Yeah.
That's what makes me nervous, and I really want us to focus more time and attention on those.
That infrastructure, for sure.
Yep.
Doug on Facebook is asking, what kind of penalties are there? Did they ever catch these guys, these cyber hackers? It seems like often they're overseas.
They do catch them. We catch our homegrown and we catch the overseas ones. You know, we work with governments in the Five Eyes and, you know, internationally to bring these guys to justice. We do internally in the U.S. as well. You know, some of them we actually do prosecute and they go to prison. Other ones, you know, we in essence turn to the good guys and help and have them help us catch more bad guys. But we do a lot of times get them. It may take a while, but luckily we do have a good system on getting these guys brought to justice.
Really appreciate the information. To be honest, it's a little unnerving, right? And I know that's part of the goal, and I am impressed with how well the city has handled it. But the fact that we've had them going after our schools, and schools, you think like, well, there is a lot of personal information in there and the files about kids and on and on and on. And cities maybe less so. I think in Minnesota, the counties tend to have maybe more of our personal information. But either way, it is the modern era, right? Like, this is something that I don't want to say we have to get used to, but we do have to be vigilant about.
Well, and to your point, you know, as much as we talk about personal information, think about city systems. What if they got control of the, you know, stoplights, and all of a sudden there's car crashes because the stoplights are going crazy? Or,
sure,
you know, the hospital attacks we saw in the last year or so. They can't call an ambulance out and someone dies. Like, there's wider ramification to these, and that's why the education of understanding what's at stake here is becoming more and more important.
Kate Keene, really great information. So glad you could spend a little time with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
All right. Kate Keene from Worldwide Technology talking about this cyber attack that our newsroom has been following. We're going to break. We are live at Target Field. It is Twins Ticket Tuesday. So just a reminder, keep listening for your chance to win four tickets to the Friday, August 8th, Kansas City Royals game at 7:10 p.m. There's going to be fireworks after the game. We will give away the four-pack when, I don't know, when you hear the sound, don't call now, but when you hear the sounder, 651-461-9226. In just a minute, from Target Field, late-night TV, it's too political. I'm not mad that it's lefty. I will tell you why I am mad about it. We'll do that conversation when we come back here on CCO. Late night TV is boring. This is my problem with the debate about Colbert, about all of late night TV, where it is. Obviously, this has been a big talking point over the last week as Colbert's show was canceled. Well, canceled. Canceled in May. Back in my day, when you cancel a show, Dan, you'd take the, you'd have security escort you to the door.
There you go.
That's how I always thought I would get canceled over at Channel 4. At 10:35 at night, do you guys want to hear politically focused content? I don't know. Just tell me if you want to hear about, if you want to hear politics jokes, or if you want to hear Nate Bargatze style jokes. 651-461-9226. Because I think that I just don't want to hear it. I just don't want to hear it. Part of what we try to do on this show, and you guys are welcome to chime in on this as well. Dan and I talk about this all the time. We want to talk about what you guys care about. We want to talk about what I care about. And politics is like, I don't know, what percent of your life, Dan? Maybe this is a topic for another day. I actually like this question.
Yeah.
What percent of your life do you spend thinking about political stuff? And you could even break that down into national political stuff versus local political stuff. I would say you and I probably think about Minnesota political stuff at a higher rate than most people in our audience.
I mean, I would say that's probably true for both, you know, Minnesota politics and national politics, but that's the nature of our job.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, it's connected in that way. You know, in my non-working life, what was that percentage? Not terribly high.
Yeah. Now, Jonathan on YouTube makes a very valid point where he's more bothered by how the Trump administration is trying to silence opposition. I do think that, like, I am highly concerned about not only the Trump administration approach of filing lawsuits against news media and media organizations, but how quickly the rest of America has decided that's fine. Because to me, it's outrageous. Outrageous. And I also think, like, I just don't care if I miss it. And I don't know how much of this is age. Now, I will say, like, Saturday Night Live, I still watch that every week. I feel like the percentage of political humor and regular humor in Saturday Night Live is about the same as it's always been. Like, I feel like that balance makes sense. And, like, don't you there's a little bit of anticipation when something big happens during a week. You're like, oh, I can't wait what they're going to do with that. But I don't need that every night. Like, what's your percentage? I guess, like, for me, it's got to be under 20%. Like, as far as a monologue, how much I want just political jokes. I'm not saying none. I'm not saying, like, let's bring out, you know, well, I was going to say Laughing, but the Laughing comedy of the Vietnam War era was highly political. So I don't know. I just think at late night I want to get away from all of this stuff a little
bit. But part of that is political content and part of that is political context, right? Because, you know, you'll hear people, well, you know, Johnny Carson never used to do political stuff. Yeah, he did.
He did, but
he did, but you never knew what his opinion was.
Yeah.
Because it was just poking fun at, you know, the general picadillos of a particular politician. They didn't go into policy issues. They didn't go into, you know, the personal stuff the way that you do now. So there's a way to do it, I still think, that you can involve politics in your monologue. But like you said, it's not the whole substance of it. And it's not, you know, you picking a side. Because that's the thing of it is when you ask the question, you know, do you want Colbert talking politics? Well, if you're a person that agrees with his politics, sure, you love it.
I guess. Is that even fun? Like, do you guys really want to hear your own?
Because politics has become such a sport, a pop culture sport at this point, that people want to be on the winning team.
They
want their feelings reaffirmed, and you know, and it just. But the problem is, when you're doing a television show, you're not just broadcasting to Democrats, and you're not just broadcasting to Republicans, unless you're a particular news network, apparently. Yeah. So you know, if you're a late night host, you've got a whole audience out there, and I think that was, you know, Jay Leno was complaining about this. His point, is that you're abandoning half of your audience when you pick that sharp of side.
That's what Leno said just a couple of days ago, that he loves political humor, but what happens is people wind up cozying too much to one side or the other. Now you have to be content with half the audience because you have to give your opinion, Leno says. Why shoot for just half an audience? I think that's part of it.
100%.
Where, and I don't know, is this why the conservatives have overall just said, like, kind of screw you to the media in general? Because it feels like all the big media, it's all left wing. And I was in the media, I can't even argue with that. Now, in local news, is that the case? No, but, like, let's not kid ourselves, right? Like, if you look at the staff of Late Night with Colbert and any of the other big shows, obviously Gutfeld is Gutfeld, but like, look at the staff, what do you think? It's 100% liberal, right? Like, if you're in LA or New York City, especially New York City, it's 100% liberal. It just is. And back in the Leno era, they were maybe more worried about, like, well, we don't want to alienate half our audience. Colbert did less political stuff. When he went all in on anti-Trump, his ratings went up. But the problem is, going up is not a viable solution because it went up from not great. I don't know.
It didn't go up enough to where, you know, the money, I mean,
aren't there other things to joke about in the world? Is
absolutely
that it?
We only absolutely there are.
I get it. Like, the Trump stuff is, like, funny. There's a lot of stuff, right?
And he does suck up a lot of the oxygen in pop culture these days.
But, like, go take a walk. There's other stuff to joke about.
Sure.
I don't know. We try to keep the balance right on this show, where we talk about politics, but, like, sometimes we're going to talk about whether we pay my kids to mow the lawn. And if you miss that scintillating segment, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. How was that?
That was pretty good.
Was that good?
That was pretty good.
You know, that's a professional
broadcaster.
Thank
you, Josh.
That's a professional broadcaster. These big, fancy New York comedians could learn a thing or two from this program. I'll tell you what. Drive Time with DeRussia. Find it wherever you get podcast. We are going to break. DeRussia Eats when we come back. We are live at Target Field. We got some pregame stretches and warm-ups going on in the outfield right now. And the other people warming up are the food vendors. Being at Target Field, what is that like? Do they make any money? I kind of wondered about that. If you're a local vendor, are you making any money? We'll talk with a chicken wings vendor on National Chicken Wing Day. That's coming up on Drive Time. And DeRush Eats is brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board. We are live at Target Field. The smell of grilled onions is in the air. The food is always a part of an experience at Target Field. And I think, maybe more than anybody else in town, the team here has done just an amazing job at keeping it fresh year after year. Every year, people are always like, Jason, what's new? What's new? What do you like? What are you eating? What's new? And what's sort of amazing is there always is something new out here. This year, one of the new vendors is Tokidoki Wings, and Matthew Kazama is with us to talk a little bit about what it's like to be a vendor at Target Field. Matthew, it's so good to see you.
Yeah, hi.
What has it been like this summer?
It's unbelievable. It's great. It's awesome.
Now, tell me the story, because when I came here on the first day, and they do like sort of the, you taste all of the different things. Mm-hmm. Your sauces and your wing and your operation there was just, it really stood out for quality. How did Target Field find you? How did they end up asking you to come on board?
Yes, one of the person who worked at Delaware North,
right?
Yeah, Romero, he used to be my regular customer at the Japanese restaurant called Fujiya back then.
Amazing.
And I've been having a restaurant for 10 years, and then one day he came in and he asked me to be able to do something.
He said, what do you think?
Yeah.
And what was your... Tell me your story on how you started working in restaurants in Minnesota.
Yeah. I came here from Japan in 1997 to work for my uncle's restaurant in Eden Prairie. And I used to be like, I couldn't speak any English.
Sure.
And nothing. So I started working, and starting from dishwasher and kitchen cook, and then, you know, teppanyaki, the hibachi.
Oh, right.
Yeah, style. The very first customer of me was Dan Gladden.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. You knew, did people tell you or did you know it was Dan?
I knew, because yeah. Dan used to play in Japan, for Japan.
Oh,
Giants, you know?
That's so cool.
Super cool. And then I was so nervous, and I cooked the first time, so I burnt probably everything, but he ate everything. I'm like, oh my goodness.
That, what a crazy story. So, yeah. And was he nice or, you know, because he can be a little ornery.
He's always so nice. He's always so nice. Such a sweet person, you know?
That is so cool.
Yeah. So that's that. And then I...
How old were you when you came here?
18.
18.
Yeah.
So you started working right in Eden Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ended up at Fujiya?
Exactly.
And yeah. Now?
Now, I own my own restaurant.
You have your own thing. Yeah,
called Ramen Kazama.
And that opened... Ramen Kazama's been open for a bit now, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Yeah.
I've been there.
Hey, thank you.
Yes.
This is
excellent. It's excellent.
10th year opening.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it's 10 years.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah, no. I can't believe. It's like 10 years ago, my first son was born.
So you look at that kid and you measure your restaurant as he gets taller and taller, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. Matthew Kazama is with us. Ramen Kazama is his one restaurant.
That's right.
But you also have...
Tokidoki Burger.
Tokidoki Burger.
Yeah.
Right attached, right? It's the same building?
Exactly.
Yes. And tell everyone where your restaurant is in Minneapolis.
It's 34th and Nicollet.
34th and Nicollet.
In Minneapolis, South Minneapolis.
So you have the ramen place. You have Tokidoki Burgers.
Yep.
But when you started talking to Target Field in Delaware North about being here,
mm-hmm.
They have enough burgers. You weren't going to do a burger thing. So how did you land on the wings?
So Romero and head chef Rob, everybody came into my restaurant and tried my food. And then wings that they thought it was different and good.
Yeah. And tell everyone if they come to Target Field where they can get your wings.
Herbix.
So in Herbix, in that... It's sort of, it's a little tucked away. If you come in on the certain gate back there,
mm-hmm.
I forget which gate it is. Do you know, Dan?
14.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's 14.
Yeah, perfect.
So you have Herbeck's right at gate 14,
mm-hmm.
and then you're right inside there.
That's right.
What does it mean? You know, I just think about a young man who grew up in Japan,
mm-hmm.
where baseball is also a way of life.
Exactly. I used to be baseball player, too.
What'd you play?
First baseman.
First base.
Switch hitter.
Hey. Can you still get in the batting cage?
Oh, yeah.
They should. Have you been down in the batting cage here? They should let you swing some ball.
I actually did.
Oh, you did?
I play against Kenta Maeda.
And how'd you do?
Not so well.
What does it mean for you? I mean, I think about an immigrant to Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
who started your own small business. You're having 10 years in. You've had ups. You've had downs. But to be in this place, in this home of Minnesota baseball Twins territory, what's it mean for you personally?
Dream came true. Seriously.
Oh.
That's a big deal.
That's so cool.
Oh.
Everybody listening has to come. Tonight, you got to get overrun. You got to come see Tokidoki Wings. You brought a couple samples. If you're watching on the stream, Matthew's going to show this. Show a little bit what you bring, because you have two different...
Yep.
So this is the regular. We'll hold this up a little bit.
Thank you very much.
So describe this.
This is Tokidoki Wing. That's homemade sauce. I wanted to make something in between, you know, buffalo and barbecue.
Yeah.
Kind of like I wanted to make something like that and
so
with my twist.
It's crispy.
Yeah.
And it's got a wet sauce on it.
Mm-hmm.
Spicy or not?
It's not that spicy. Just a little bit. It's all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
Hey, thanks.
Really good. And then you have another.
Yes.
So a dry rub on the other one.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. More crispier. I wanted to.
It's so good.
Hey, thank you.
You know what, Matthew? I'm so excited for you. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you, Jason.
Tokidoki Wings. Go see them in Herbeck's. And this is part of really. Pete Spike is behind us from Delaware North,
mm-hmm.
and I give him a lot of credit because I just think he's done an amazing job.
He's amazing.
Yeah. Keeping the local flavor here and also giving Minnesota small businesses a shot to come in here.
Yeah.
Do you make any money or is it more marketing?
A little bit of both.
He wants to make more money, people. go and buy some dang wings, all right?
Yes, please.
Matthew Kazama, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
This
appreciate
was super
you.
Fun. It is 4:47. We're live at Target Field. The Twins in action against the Red Sox. What a win last night. Oh, my goodness. It was so fun. After that rain delay, the storms come through, and the Twins came back to life. Classic Twins, right? We're going to beat the good teams and not beat the bad teams. Let's keep it going, though. Winning makes summer so much more fun. We'll tell you who won Twins Ticket Tuesday in just a minute here on Drive Time. Oh, how great was that conversation with Matthew Kazama?
He was great.
So good. If you missed it, podcast, we've got everything for you on podcast. It's all time shifted, every segment. So make sure you subscribe to that and check it out. And, of course, you can rewind if you're watching on YouTube at any time. So you watch the YouTube live, just scroll it back. And off you go. Dan, who won Twins Ticket Tuesday?
We want to say congrats to Sarah from Becker, who just picked up a four-pack of tickets for the Friday, August 8th Twins game versus the Kansas City Royals. That's a 7:10 p.m. game.
Nice.
And of course, if you didn't win that time, you can take your family. But you're on the Twins versus the Royals. There's going to be post-game fireworks that night. You can go to twins.com/tickets and get all your tickets there.
Or
you can keep listening to Drive Time with DeRussia because
what?
We had a little... issue earlier today.
Corzo screwed it up.
I wasn't going to go there.
That's
but
fine.
Since you said so, you know, you have.
He's a lawyer. He could probably sue the hell out of me.
So we have another four-pack of tickets to give away.
We're doing
between
again.
Now and all the right. end of the show. So keep listening. And when you hear the Wind Twin sounder again between fine. Now and the end of the show, you could get another four-pack of tickets. I mean, not Sarah. She already won her four-pack. But everybody else that's listening can get another shot at it.
Dan, here live at Target Field, we have one... aggressive fan of the show.
The Fly? About The Fly?
I'm talking about The Fly.
The Fly's really bothering you.
Since I sat down at 2:45, there's been a fly like a horse fly. This fly is the size of, it's like the size of this Yeti tumbler.
No, it's not.
It's enormous.
It's a fly. You're fine.
The fly keeps landing on me, landing on the computer.
Yes.
I hate flies. Mosquitoes, you got a fighting chance. A mosquito lands on you, smack.
Mosquitoes are way worse than flies.
No. The mosquito, you have a pretty good chance. Yeah. Jonathan says it's on my forehead right now.
I think Jonathan's messing you.
I never feel as inept as when I'm trying to kill a fly.
I mean, they're very crafty and clever and shifty, yes.
Now, there are some of you out there who wouldn't hurt a fly. I am just a failure at my effort to commit fly-icide. Like, I want to kill the fly. And around the house, I'll use magazines.
Sure.
I'll use newspapers.
Sure.
I'll use sale papers. And you try to thwack it. Now, I don't believe in the fly swatter. Do you have a fly swatter?
I do not have a fly swatter, but I have no moral opposition to a fly swatter.
And it's kind of gross to me. I like it to be like a fleeting tool in the execution of a fly.
So you want it to be something that's disposable rather than the fly swatter that you keep around and it's still
Do you wash the fly swatter if you get a juicy one? I don't know.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm just saying, this dang fly, if this fly would leave us right now, this is not what I would subject
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're on your way to dinner, I sincerely apologize for the last 3 minutes of Drive Time with DeRussia.
I mean, flies,
juicy
man.
Juicy one. What's the matter with you?
You've never killed a juicy fly? Killing a juicy fly is an experience that should be satisfying and is deeply disturbing.
There's plenty deeply disturbing right now, yes. I'll agree with you.
I do not like it. I do not like it.
Clearly.
Yeah. So, flies. I'm opposed. That's a hot take.
I got that vibe. Yeah, no,
that's a hot take.
You've made that very clear.
We aren't going to complain about flies over the next hour, but we have a lot. We have a lot coming up in the next hour, don't we? Dan Hayes, see, there's the dang fly again, right here, right on your.
He's fine. He's not hurting anything.
What, you just want to let the fly live? Are you that kind of pacifist?
No, I'm not that kind of pacifist. I just don't care.
I hate it. Absolutely hate it. Drive Time coming back with DeRussia Hour News Headlines next.